It's all about us, and it's time to bow down.
Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of Bow Down. We are so excited to be here with y'all today and also to be chatting with each other. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I am marvelous. How are you, Reese? Looking lovely and gorgeous and regal, I will say, queen, as always. How are you? Thank you.
Good. I'm quite excited. I have, as we were talking about a little bit, a weekend trip this weekend that I'm really excited for. But yeah, even as we were just talking before getting into the episode, hearing you say that you're just feeling this renewed passion for this, and it feels so purpose driven. That is just like the stuff that, like, purpose is the currency that I want to deal in. And so I just love that we're doing it. And yeah, I'm feeling good.
Likewise. Yeah. And yeah, it feels so good to have a purpose. And I think sometimes we wander around until we find that purpose, and we think we have purpose. You know, we're going through the motions, and you know, again, we're always moving hopefully forward. But all of a sudden, when that, it's almost like when you have two magnets, and you know, you move them closer and closer together, but then all of a sudden, boom, they click together. You know, that's how it sort of felt. That's how it feels for me. Like, for a long time, you know, like I felt these different poles and different things I wanted to do, but all of a sudden, boom, you know, the magnets clicked. And you know, sometimes when the magnets are strong enough, it's almost impossible to separate them. You know,
yeah.
Once that purpose, you know, it comes, and it's such a beautiful feeling. Like it's a flow state, you know, and we've talked about that in the past, about this idea of when you're in flow and you're able to just be, it's the best feeling in the world, whether it's with another person, whether it's in your job, whether it's in what you do, whether it's in your family, doesn't matter. Like when you're walking in that flow, it's, you know, it's the closest thing to heaven I know of personally.
I'm inclined to kind of say that it is, you know, that is what any heaven of mine would look like. It's just being like in that state for all eternity, right? As scary as the concept of eternity is. I've been really playing around, because of course I work helping people find and pursue their purpose. Living your purpose is a really big part of living in coherence. And I listened to a podcast the other day, and forgive me, listeners, if you've heard me talk about this before, because I've put out a few things about it. But I was listening to this podcast. It's called Psychology for Your 20s. And I really enjoy the podcast. I think it is a lot about like coming of age psychology, but I think it is applicable at any point in anyone's life. And the host had on Elizabeth Gilbert, who is the author of Eat, Pray, Love, but also Big Magic, which is my favorite book of hers. It's one of, to me, it's like the Bible of creativity. It is a phenomenal book. But in it, Liz was talking about how purpose is actually a lie that we've all kind of been sold, that it's this thing that society tells us we have to have and we have to pursue, and that coming with that is this conflation of work, like the thing that makes you money, your career, which is this long-standing thing, your hobby, which are the things that can bring you joy, and then a calling, which not everyone necessarily has. And I was so surprised to disagree, because I'm not used to disagreeing with experts on these things. Because normally, especially for someone like Liz Gilbert and Gemma Spegg, who's the host of this podcast, they're very informed, very well researched, very highly respected in their fields as well. And once the podcast ended, I was just left there like, man, that is just not how I think of purpose at all. And so I've been working on this. I'm calling it, my working title is the purpose paradigm. That's like, what is this false purpose that we've been sold, and what is actually true purpose? And I think false purpose is this kind of like, a box to be checked. You're required to like make something with it. It should be the thing that makes you money and is a part of like the machine. And I think also is stagnant, right, is a really big part of that false purpose. But true purpose is so much more flow. It's ever evolving. It grows with you. It is the thing that allows you to change. It is the thing that promotes evolution and, yeah, like breaking down systems as opposed to reinforcing the ones that exist that we disagree with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I that's interesting. I haven't read Big Magic. It's definitely, it's on my list, but my list is, you know, seemingly never ending. Right. Talk about eternity. But just listening and noticing what comes up for me as you talk about that is I think you had it right in terms of we have to define what is purpose, right? And I think I would agree with the notion that the purpose that we've been sold, or that society, or that you know, we've been ingrained is our purpose. You know, whether that's, you know, to make money or to have a family, to have a bigger house, to be happy, you know, to whatever that purpose is that we think we have. I think it's helpful to check and see if that truly resonates with us, or mm-hmm. if we're doing it because we should. You said should several times in there, and I'm always cautious of shoulds, because you know, that's not to say if you feel you should do something, you shouldn't do it. Like I'm not trying to say, oh, burn down the, you know, there should be no shoulds ever. But I do think it's worthwhile to question that and say, do I really need to do this? Is this really for me? Does this feel right? And not surface level feelings either, but in inside, you know, is there a click in who I am? So yeah, I tend to agree with your view of things. I'm curious how you know, maybe we'll talk about the purpose paradigm as you flesh it out a little bit more, because I guess what I would say is if you find your purpose, when you find your purpose, you'll know you found your purpose. You won't be wondering, is this my purpose? Is what right. I think. And that's, I think, how you can know that it's your purpose. Because, you know, I go back to something I've said a couple of times, and that is I can't not do this. Whatever it is we're building, whatever it is we're trying to create, a better world, a safe space, a playground of what did we call it? A playground of radical permission, you know, whatever it is we're building, that feels like I want everyone in that to know their purpose, to find right. their purpose. But it also takes doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, and you know this, you know, I mean, think about how much work, you know, you've done on yourself, how much you've changed in, I mean, 3 months, let alone 3 years or 4 years. And likewise myself. And,
yeah.
You know, how much, but, would I have the purpose or feel the, would I feel the purpose in my heart the way I do if I hadn't done the work, if I had just sort of, no, I don't think so. Because it took a lot of, attention and a lot of awareness of who I am. And it's beautiful when you get there. It can be frustrating while you're on the journey,
yeah.
but you will get there, and you're seeing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I totally agree. And I think as someone who has kind of experienced that click, the magnets coming together, to use your metaphor from earlier, you do experience this feeling of like, aha, right? It is, it is just this like kind of consuming feeling of alignment. How do you characterize that? Because I think for anyone who may be like starting out on this journey or beginning the quote unquote work, right? It can be really hard to trust that feeling. And while you're still kind of, you know, trying to find the sculpture inside the marble slab, but you're chipping away, right? To know when you've hit a piece of it. How do you experience that?
I think it comes in different forms. Reese, to be honest, it's not necessarily one way. To me, it's, and you know, I mean, I grew up in a very evangelical home, and you know, we read the Bible all the time, and you know, I know more about the Bible probably than, you know, I'd say 99% of Christians, just guessing. Not certainly there's people who know way more than I do, but you know, I've actually read the Bible, which, you know, is probably puts me right there in the top 5% of all Christians anyway. But you know, but not, no, and again, no shade there. That's not the intention. It's just though, you know, to me it's this peace. It's and the verse I'm thinking of is you know, well, what the peace that passes understanding, you know, you come in your heart, essentially. Have this, don't worry about anything, you know, but let this peace that passes understanding. And to me, that's kind of what it feels like. It's this surety, it's this knowing that, and that's the problem, you know, you can't technique your way to it. You can't affirm your way to it. These are tools, and they're wonderful, and I think they're positive and they're helpful. But and you have to experience that peace, and you'll know it. It's like the Supreme Court definition of obscenity. You know, I'll know it when I see it. You know, you'll know it when you feel it. And if you haven't felt it, that's okay. Like, don't judge yourself. Don't wonder, can I feel it? Because you can and you will. It took me decades. I can say that with all truth. I spent 25 years of my life with my sole purpose being to, you know, make money and to have a nice house and to, you know, have a, you know, that was not my purpose. I mean, that was just a tool. That was something that I needed at the time. But it's such a, all I can say is it's such a, you know, and I was achieving and going higher and higher on the corporate ladder, moving up, managing more and more people, thinking that that's what you're supposed to do. It reminds me of Fight Club. And he's like, you know, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, what do I do? Well, you're 20, go to college. Okay, I went to college. Now I go to college. Well, get a job. Okay, now what? I go to my dad. Oh, well, you know, get married, I guess. You know, that's how many of us live our lives on autopilot? And If you don't break that cycle by looking at it, by noticing it, by asking the questions, is this what I really want? Does this resonate in my soul? Not in my head, not in those parts of us that are scared. And like, I mean, because you need money. I mean, listen, I'm not like, oh, let's go around and I mean, to me, I think it's just a no. If is to sit back and just notice and dream and see what stops your dreams. The thing I've been working on myself is when I have a thought or when I have a dream or imagination or something comes to me, I ask myself the question, is this thought restrictive or is this thought expansive? And if it's a restrictive thought, if it's saying don't, should, have to, come on, do this, blah, 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 you know, that constant alarm, I ask myself, why? What would the opposite be? What would an expansive thought be here? You know, I'm worried about paying this bill. Well, that's restrictive. I'm never going to be. I can't buy that. I can't. No, that's restrictive. Expansive is I will. It's mine. It's I can do this. I will do this. Why not me? You know, rather than why me, why not me? And the more you just start to do this, I think clarity comes because you're operating on a more soulful, spiritual level than the rational. What how does that resonate with you?
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think, and I like this terminology of soulful because I think, as someone who has studied the English language, it is a deeply complicated thing. And I think so often, so many of our misunderstandings and disagreements within ourselves and with others is in not understanding what words actually mean and what they mean to people. And soul is such a complex word. But when you, I think thinking of this idea of something resonating within your soul, you also have to understand what that soul is and what that means to you. I think for a lot of people, soul equates to mind and brain, like if you're very science oriented, but separating from just logic and analytical thinking, right? Like there is still something that arises outside of the academic intellectual mind, even for those that are like drenched in science, and even for those that are absolutely steeped in the spiritual world, that this, you know, they speak in the language of soul. What does that actually mean to you? And when you begin to kind of parse out what that means, I think it also can get, like you said, the clarity comes. I think you can begin to feel what resonates better too, because how do you know if something resonates? We only know that sound exists because it has us to bounce off of. Sound does not exist until it hits something and that vibration is made. This soul resonance, it's something hitting your soul. So if that soul is undefined for you, how are you going to know what that resonance is? So I do think it's this exploration of self in a lot of ways that even if you hate the word soul, okay, use self, use heart, use, you know, whatever word feels right, and figure out why does that word feel right? What does that mean to you? And then you can see what resonates. I think also this dichotomy of expansive versus restrictive reminds me a lot of like fear versus trust too, right? Like restriction is almost always rooted in fear. And I think it's so interesting. Like fear is something that I really struggle with in trying to release all of the what ifs and all of the, you know, anxiety inducing things. And I think that recognizing what default is for you too is a really big piece of this, because default for me, oftentimes what I have come to learn about myself is this kind of constantly scanning hypervigilance, what's going wrong, what's going right, like I need to be on my guard. And then you're in fight or flight mode, right? Like your sympathetic nervous system is off the charts, as opposed to being in this rest and digest and letting things come. So I think it's also this combination of like releasing what does not serve you that has kind of been offered as truth too. Like in hearing, there's so much content out there now that's like, this is how to start a spiritual journey, or how to start your spiritual practice, or this is what this, what soul means, or this is what working with a divinity should look like. And great. I think that can be really helpful for people exploring this. And like you said, it means nothing if it's not for you. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's so profoundly said. You know, to me, I love how you contrasted, you know, fear and trust, or another word could be fear and faith, you know, depending on how you know, yeah. Words matter, but they also don't, because you make your own meaning out of those words, you know. Yep. And I love making meaning, you know, again, a pushback to that, because we're always making meaning. And generally, the meaning we make is based on our past, because we're trying to interpret. That's where the anxiety comes from. We saw this pattern in the past. It was harmful to us in some way. I don't ever want to see that pattern again. And it's beautiful and it's lovely. And you're not the person who experienced that in the past, whatever the trauma was. And that's not to minimize the trauma. That's not to say it didn't happen or get over it or any of that, because that's hateful and hurtful and not helpful. However, it is also to recognize who you are, that the person, the woman, the girl, the boy, whatever, who experienced that awful trauma, whether it was repeated, whether it was a single incident, that's still not who you are today. You're so much more than that. But if you think about it, to me, trust versus fear. What is fear except trust in bad things? I mean, that's all. I mean, there's really no, it's two sides of the same coin, which you need.
Yeah.
Because how can you can't trust, if there isn't a trust in things not working, then how could you have trust in things working? The question is where do you focus your energy and attention?
Damn.
All too often. And our brains are wired, of course, to focus on negative things. Because from an evolutionary perspective, like you got two cavemen, you know, one hears a rustling in the bush and is like, oh, that's nothing. I'm going to go to sleep. I trust everything's going to be okay. The other one thinks, huh, maybe there's a tiger. Which one's going to live longer? Which one's going to pass on their genes? And we know, by the way, we scientists have shown from an epigenetic perspective, from a science, and this is why I love everything. I mean, I am a very spiritual, metaphysical person, like at my core, because that's who I am. But at the same time, I'm also very, I have a rational mind. I like science. I'm not a poo-pooer of science. But science is that, so I was reading about this experiment that some scientists did. I don't remember, I don't have a reference. Maybe I'll find it. But basically, they taught, using operating conditioning and things of that nature, they trained mice to be scared of a certain food, I think it was. Trained male mice in a vacuum. So they took male mice. And I don't fully remember exactly the circumstances, but they made it so that they were petrified of eating this particular food, like they, and which normally mice would love, you know, and let's call it cheese. I don't think it was, but they basically, you know, through operant conditioning, shocking, you know, other sort of training, they had these mice have a tremendous aversion, these male mice, a tremendous aversion to cheese. They then went on to sire baby mice, and those baby mice and generations thereupon had the same aversion that the father had, even though cheese, you know, they never, you know, where did that come from? Generations down the road, it's that community, you know, that to me is what we're up against. And decades and years and hundreds, centuries of oppression and minimization of who we are, who women are, especially. And it seeps into your DNA in a sense. And yeah. So we're really, you know, it's not easy to live the way we want to live. The way you, right. It's not easy to live as a queen. It's not easy to live in victory because you have everything stacked against you. So just the very fact that you're listening, that if you're listening to this conversation, to me, you're one of the 0.1%. You're looking towards something. You want more. And that's great. Keep looking. So yeah, I love that. It's so, so powerful. Let's condition ourselves in the opposite direction. Let's condition ourselves right. to believe, to trust, to say, and where you can get that, I think, from is if you truly believe this is what you're supposed to do and there's nothing else you can do, you have to burn your ships. Like that's a mental form of you know, Cortez burned his ships, I heard, you know, where when they reached the New World, they burned their ships so no one would be thinking about home. Biblically, Lot's wife, right? You turn back and you look back and you turn into a pillar of salt. You know, it's so clear about, you know, when you study it, when you think about it. So yeah, I love that. Yeah. I guess the question is, how do you mentioned anxiety and which I'm sure everyone listening, including myself, gets. Like what things have worked for you when maybe you had a period of higher anxiety or things you didn't like? What do you do when that happens? I'm curious. How do you get it under control?
Oof. I think this is such an important and nuanced question, because I think to go back to what you're saying about the genetic ancestry here, each of us are coming in preloaded with different things.
On top of that, that's our software. Yep, you're right. We got AOL installed, which we don't really want. You know? Yeah.
Some of us have got Yahoo and even still like MySpace accounts and yep, like crazy
GeoCities,
stuff.
My GeoCities page,
right,
you know.
Right. I think also understanding your conditioning as well, right? For me, I think looking at my anxiety as something that there's so much talk out there. And I guess just quickly, one thing that I want to preface before going into this too, I have a real problem with therapy language. As someone who has been in therapy my entire life, it has been so helpful for me in understanding like, oh, what is a boundary? Or oh, what is my attachment style or my love language? Like all of these very therapy words. These have been completely overused. We have all been inundated with this language. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, language doesn't really matter unless what the meaning behind it carries. It depends on how you're making meaning out of it. And I think the way that we have made meaning out of these specific therapy words has been really harmful, actually, for a lot of people. So when I go into this, and I will be using some therapy language, I just kind of want to preface that I think it's important to be clear with what we're actually talking about. And if someone is armchair diagnosing someone as a narcissist, my red flags go up immediately. Oh. And that word is way overused. So
that and gaslighting. Say,
right.
And toxic, I think, would be another one, but yeah.
Trauma, like these are very important words when we hold them with importance. And I think, of course, we have to be careful not to be like overly sensitive. We exist in the world and, you know, triggers are going to pop up and things are going to happen. Trigger, there's another one, right? But we cannot walk on eggshells, but also it's our job to protect ourselves and understand what we need to ask for and what we need to speak up for in different environments. So I have been in therapy since I was 12 years old. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder and OCD when I was 14. And I have been on and off different medications to treat this since I was 14. One, medicine does help a lot of people. The way that my therapist first described it to me is that medicine is a frame that you can put around the thoughts that run wild. And if your brain is bouncing around in 1,000 different directions at once, and you give it a frame to work within, you can hopefully start getting it to go in a motion that is logical, that makes sense, because it restricts some of that movement. It allows the energy that you have to be more productive and be put into a good forward motion. So medicine has been extremely helpful for me in rewiring certain things. From a more metaphysical standpoint, and I guess just like generalized anxiety that we all experience, I need to stop that thought in its tracks. That has been the number one most helpful thing for me. If I have a trigger or something pop up for me, my brain will absolutely run away with it. And that means I have to be like the like football defender, I don't know football positions, that fully like stops it, tackles it to the ground, and is like, no, you are not getting out of here, because if you do, we are going nowhere fast. So I have to tackle it to the ground. And then once I've tackled it to the ground, I say, thank you. Thank you for protecting me. And the thing that really works for me is breaking all of this down into really understanding why it's happened. So I have a thought that is, my friend doesn't like me, actually. I think that's a very common one for a lot of, probably women specifically. I will say, okay, no, stop. You know that's not true. We've tackled it to the ground. Thank you, thought, for protecting me. I understand that it's scary to be vulnerable in relationships. I see that. And I appreciate you looking out for me. I'm thanking it. Then I want to stick out my hand and pick up that player up off the field and give it a hug and say, I get it. We feel this. We feel this. And it is largely because of this childhood experience I had that now I understand better. It is because my brain, we are predisposed to thinking like this, and it's okay, and you're loved and safe. And then I say, head back to the bench, get some water, walk it off. right? So I think really slowing down the thought process, because when I get into that zone, it moves so quickly. I have to be the one that slams the brakes, and then also immediately meeting gratitude, kindness, and grace, self-grace. And then if all of that fails, I really think distraction is not a horrible technique. That is something that I used for such a long period of my life when I did not have the mental resilience to be able to walk myself through this kind of system. And now that I've practiced it, I'm much better at redirecting this pathway, right? Because that running back wants to go down the pathway that it knows works. It's running the play that we've always run. And the quarterback is now saying, no, 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 we got to run this other play. It's actually more successful. It's actually going to get us where we want to go. And you got to retrain all of your running backs and linemen. And again, I clearly don't know football decisions, but I'm going to keep using this metaphor.
I love it. I love it.
So you got to retrain. Now that I've retrained, it's much easier to run the new plays for me. And those new plays can happen in quicker succession. When I was first realizing what the old plays were, why were the old plays there? Who decided that these were the plays that my mental team was going to run? It was really hard to even begin to think about new plays, new players, integrating all of these things. And so when I was younger and I was having like a full-blown panic attack 3 times a week, a lot of this looked like put on The Office and distract your mind to allow it to rest, because that is also important before you can move forward. So I think for me, all of this, I've been very long-winded with this, but I think the thing that this has taught me more than anything is self-trust. And I think that because that is a really long, winding road that I went through, I saw a quote forever ago that was probably just on Pinterest or something, but if it's someone, I apologize. I did not come up with this. But it was, show yourself how much you can rely on the person you've become.
I love that. Oh, that's powerful. So powerful.
Right?
Yeah.
That because I couldn't for the longest time. My brain felt like my biggest enemy. But now it's like, I can rely on myself. I know I can, because I have years and years of history and practice with myself, with the team that I have picked, that I have cultivated, that I have worked towards making through blood, sweat, and tears, like truly. And now it is my job to continue to show up for myself. That's my job.
I love that. I love showing up for yourself. You're not trying to show up for other people. It's not performative. You know, that's and everything you said, I think, Ruth, is so lovely. And I love the idea of, I mean, recognizing, so noticing. I mean, that's always the first step, is to notice. Then to treat these thoughts with kindness and love. And yes, you may tackle them because they don't serve a purpose in this moment, especially. And sometimes it can be, listen, I don't have time right now to unpack this, but you know, later on we'll talk about it. You know, can you give me some space? I love you. I appreciate you, anxiety. I thank you. However, let's chat later. Can you step back? You know, I'd really appreciate it. And as you build that self-trust, to me, you know, that self, you're building yourself. Your self-light is shining more, and there's it shines through the cracks that the facade that this human body, this bag of flesh, our brains have. You know, we're so much more than that. And so I love. And so many people, I think, get so frustrated, particularly with panic attacks, that you get that fear to set in. Like, what if it happens again? Oh my God, what am I going to do? And I also love that, you know, too many times I think in this space, we can demonize medicine, you know, and stigmatize the idea of having to take you know, or feeling needing to take pills, or, you know, and that's so silly, because if they offer, if they help, then they're a tool. They're nothing more than that. There's no, but people put meaning on, oh, I'm broken. I need, no one's broken. You're not broken. Like, in fact, it's very logical. You know, the reason you feel this way is because of everything you experience. So in fact, it's actually logical that you would have this anxiety. Logical.
Yeah.
It would be,
It would be weird if you didn't have it. And it
would
has
be fake.
Served,
it wouldn't be real. Yeah.
It has served you well for a very long time. Otherwise it would not be there. Right. I think too, with this medicine thing, the piece of the analogy of putting this frame over your mind's pattern that my therapist offered me was that eventually, once your brain learns to go in this system that works really well, you can remove that frame if it feels like you are able to, and you can experiment with having a looser frame or having a different frame or taking it away altogether. And for me, I also don't want to demonize people that have decided medicine is not for them and they want to try a more holistic approach. I think a combination thereof is important for all of us, and different people will use different things. And while, yeah, I love my somatic nervous system work, I love my breath work, I love all this stuff, I still take some medicine, because any time that I have tried to wean off of it, it hasn't gone well for me, even with all of this deep understanding of the other kind of ways that we can approach treating mental health without medicine. So I want to hold space and honor that there are vast ways to do that, but there is space for all of them together. I apologize for cutting you off there too, but I'm like that.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No, no.
Yes.
That's so important to say. I, you know, full disclosure, I also take medicine. So there's no stigma to me. Could I stop?
Right.
Probably, if I wanted to. I've weaned down a little bit, and not proud, or I don't say that, oh, look at me. I mean, for me, that's what worked. And at some point, maybe I won't need to take them anymore. But if I do, I do. And it's okay. Like, not only is it okay, it's what you need in that moment. And why not? Why judge that? Why do you put meaning on that? Like, I mean, again, somebody who wants, you know, oh my God, I can't, but, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I take, you know, take an antidepressant or whatever the case is. Like, okay, well, why? Why? What is it that, you know, I feel I'm not good enough, or I feel I'm broke. You know, you start to get down to those core beliefs. And that's, to me, what it's, you know, if you believe you can't do this on your own, you know, then okay, but if you believe the medicine is going to be helpful, then it is, and use it. It's good. There's nothing, you know. So often we feel like there's this road. You have to follow this road. You know, this is the only way. And something works for us, and it's like it's got to work for everybody. But no, everybody's got a different path.
I think within that too, like holding space for your path and someone else's path, I think it is so easy to say, oh my God, from a really beautiful place, I found this thing that is magic for me. I have never found anything that has made me feel like this, that has allowed me to do these things. Beautiful, brilliant. Definitely talk about that experience. Other people probably want to hear about it and try it. It's not going to work for everyone. It is not the answer. Like, there is no capital T, capital A, the answer. And I think that a lot of us fool ourselves into that. Like, you are the answer, right? Like, you have to be the answer for you. And I think we spend so much time looking for these external answers that we let these outside voices dictate other decisions. And it's beautiful to share your experience, and maybe it does work for someone in whatever field, right? But not letting the fact, I think a lot of times it can contribute to this idea of, I'm wrong. There's something wrong with me. I haven't felt this spark of purpose, right? Like, can I feel it? And even with the panic attacks, it's like, it is so scary. And you also feel this, like, it's never going to change. I'm never going to get out of this. It'll never be different. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I want to in that sentence besides you are your own ultimate authority. Don't doubt that.
Yeah, don't you have your power. When you look for something outside of you, external to you, you're just giving away your power.
Yeah.
Period. I mean that and it's okay. There's no judgment on that because we all do that to some degree or another.
Right.
Because that's the life we live. But as you continue to explore that and see what it means, what does it mean to give away your power? Do you like this? Is it you can. I mean that and there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, in a relationship, it could be beautiful to do that.
Yeah.
I think that truly is a connection. When you allow, you choose, you give your power to another person.
Yeah.
In a way that, I mean, there's something beautiful in that, to have the courage to do that. And, but also know that you're still the one giving that, you are the one in giving that power right away. So you're the ultimate power there. Even if you do choose to do that, you give your heart to somebody else, you're still the one with the power to do that. And
yes,
when it comes to things, and again, it's not to say like leverage the resources that are out there, whether, you know, and don't never feel bad about needing help from somebody else because, you know, they're part of you anyway, in a
right
way.
And, right,
and they're brought into your life for a reason. And I love shared experiences, you know, are so powerful because everything, you know, when your mind doesn't know what to expect, your mind hates that. Everybody's mind hates that. Like, they want to know what to expect. And so when you're able to say, yeah, I took Wellbutrin, or I was on, you know, Buspirone or whatever, you know, no matter what it is, this was my experience. Okay. You know, there's other people who have been through this, and there's a
right
power in that togetherness. And
yeah,
you know, panic attacks, but you know, I'll reframe panic attacks a little bit in this sense of when you recognize and truly get, you know that I'm the one creating this panic attack. I don't like it. I don't understand it. I don't know why. But can you see how incredibly powerful you are, that you are able to create literally out of nothing, to create these incredibly detrimental, I don't want to make light of it,
right,
symptoms. Like, you're literally, your mind is that powerful. So again, everything has its counterpart. If your mind is powerful enough to practically make you think you're going to die with physical symptoms, how powerful is it in the other direction as well? Because it can't work this way and not this way.
Like, right.
You can't. Nothing in the universe works that way. There's matter and there's antimatter. There's, you know, good and there's bad, or, you know, good and evil. If you even believe in that construct, but in order for there to be light, there has to be dark. You can't have dark. You can't have light without dark.
Yeah. I think
so.
Yeah. No, just absolutely. And I think that that's just such a powerful reframe. And I want to go back to what you said earlier about what is fear, if not faith in something bad, right? It's like
you're believing in something every moment, every breath you take, you're believing something.
Yes.
And most 99.9% of the time for most of us, we are believing whatever our autopilot script, our NPC, you know, we're just like NPCs in a game running around doing the same thing we've always done. Occasionally, maybe we make a choice, we think, although, you know, we could probably do an episode on free will anyway. But, you know, but my, you know, we, when you start to see, when you recognize the truth of that, that is the first step, to see that, you know, you can call it manifestation. You can call it, prayer. You can call it creation, co-creation, whatever, you know, however, again, that's language and it means something different to everybody else. But I believe that the world is just a mirror.
Yeah.
And so often we try to, you know, you don't look in a mirror and wait for your reflection to move. Right? That's a fool. You know, I don't look at the mirror. I'm wearing a blue sweater. I don't go in the mirror and say, I want that sweater to be red, you know, and look at myself in the mirror until it turns into a, because the guy in the mirror is never going to, is never going to change his until I do.
If they do, I would run screaming into the night and like try and burn the mirror.
Yeah, right.
I'd be terrified.
What mirror? Where did this mirror come from? Whose mirror is this exactly?
Whose mirror is it? Yeah.
And listen, I'm gay. If a mirror wants to do that to me, I'm putting it out there. You know, I will retract that statement. I'm game for the experience because I don't have the fear anymore, and I don't want anyone to be afraid because I see how beautiful everyone is, even when they're ugly as sin. There's a poetic beauty in, I mean, even in terrible behavior, hurtful behavior, things that we don't want to do, there still is a poetry in it in some ways. That it's all flows, you know?
It's true. And it really makes me think of this like romantic idea of the sublime. And I mean romantic in the true like period literary sense of it, not the way we kind of colloquially use it now. But the idea that experiencing the peak of horror and beauty at the same time is the vastness of the human experience, that is pure awe, both in it being utterly destructive and creative at the same time. And it is drenched in fear, but also faith. And that kind of idea of the sublime that you can find in so many things. Even what you said earlier about this, like fear of the unknown is the thing that so many, like that's the worst thing, right? Is the fear of the unknown. And one of my favorite authors, H.P. Lovecraft, very bad person, but really great author, has like all of his work that's in like Gothic romanticism, centers around trying to make readers feel this fear of the unknown. Why do I love his work so much? Because it gets at that thing, right? Even these things that are ugly and hard to look at and hard to face, there is something in human nature that is unearthed there that we are being forced to face. And I think it goes back to this idea of like the two sides of the same coin. Without darkness, there cannot be light. But I think also there is something about the embrace of the darkness too, not just the tolerance of it, right? Like this is maybe a odd example, but I remember in high school, me and a few friends started a GSA club, which is a Gay Straight Alliance for those who maybe didn't have GSA. But a few of my very good friends in high school were like, we really want to do this. And I was like, how can I help? How can I support? And our principal or head of upper school released a statement because we got a lot of backlash about it, which was upsetting, that we need to be a culture of tolerance, that is what we as a school were going to strive for. And so we put out a statement right back that said, absolutely not. We are striving for a culture of acceptance and embrace. And I think it's the same thing, right? Like tolerance in and of itself is still holding space for something to be not okay, for something to be unsettling, uncomfortable. And in this case, it was like to hold on to the last shred of your homophobia, right? For whatever reason inside. But it's like in this broader example, it's like holding on to that last shred of the unknown is really scary and not leaning in.
Wow, I love that. So much there. I mean, you just said so much. I want to comment on two things specifically. Number one, I hate the word tolerate or tolerance. Like when you said that, like immediately alarm bells, you know, so this idea, oh, we need to be tolerant. That is so paternalistic. That is minimizing, that is shame inducing, and as somebody who lived, you know, it's so funny that word, because one of the things I realized is once I found out who I was, particularly my neurodivergence and what that meant for me, I realized I spent 40 plus years of my life being tolerated and thinking that was a good thing, Like, just that's all I would hope for. That was the breadcrumb. And again, how many, you know, again, talking about bow down, how many women feel tolerated and think that that's good enough?
Well, like, that you're being handled.
Yeah. You're being handled. It's again, it's patronizing. It's not, I love the idea of affirming, like versus tolerant. You know, tolerance is saying, okay, we'll let you here. Affirming is saying, welcome. We want you here.
Yeah.
And that little shift is so important. So I love your guys' response. That was incredible.
Thank you. I want to take what you said maybe even one step further and correct me if you would disagree with this, but not only is tolerance fine, well, you can be here, welcome is we want you here. I would even say that acceptance is you are an integral part of what here is, right? It's not even
here
on
wouldn't
me.
Be here without you. Here right. wouldn't be here without you.
It's not even my, like, why do I get to decide that you're welcome? You are, you wouldn't be here without you. And just within, I was looking earlier at my phone because I came across a video on my Reels and I wanted to bring it up and I was like, but I don't want to quote this one thing wrong. So I referenced it. So if you saw me looking down, that's what I was trying to pull up. In this, it was talking about how women have been felt handled and tolerated. And even in like a feminist movement, it is still framed within counterculture. Like to have a feminist movement necessitates patriarchy, right? Because there has to be something that is working against. Not to say that it's not necessary and beautiful and amazing and all the things, right? Of course. And then this creator, which we can link the video down below and tag her, I'm forgetting her name now, she was talking about how that there's a lot of ego tied up in this concept of gender. And so much of the reason why women feel handled by a lot of like spiritual movements too is because everything really has been curated by men. And when men experience ego death, or even men are feeling this kind of deconstruction of self, it is because with them being the default of here, I'll say, that there is a deconstruction in that. And that doesn't resonate with a lot of women. And she was saying that's because for women, their nature is of a different divinity, that men must experience this certain ego death to be reborn, whereas women, it is a return to self to be reborn, to be empowered, as opposed to, like, I don't know if this is making sense, if I'm reframing it correctly, but I saw it, and just in hearing you talk a little bit ago, I was like, oh, I remembered I wanted to bring this up and hear what Dennis had to say about the dichotomy. Yeah,
I love that. And I think it's so true that I mean women are life givers. What is more powerful than that? I mean, men think they're so powerful because they've got muscles, or because they're bigger, and these are just characteristics. Man can't give life. Yes, they have to be part of the process, absolutely. But that to me is power. I mean, every single one of us came from a woman. A man was, you know, a man was involved, but a woman was committed, is what I'll say. And that to me is so beautiful. And like to disparage that, to somehow say you're less than, and I mean, I just think of all the ways society does this every day, all these microaggressions that once your eyes, it's like the FedEx arrow. Like once you see it, the constant microaggressions, even just in everyday conversation, every woman I talk to, I see this come out. How these microaggressions, and you keep getting hurt over and over again. And they're just little cuts, you know, they're pinches.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you can't even imagine, you get to the point where you can't imagine a world without them. And it's just, and you start to tolerate it, you know, and then that goes back to and how do we change it? Well, I think it's what we're doing is how we change it. Like when you reveal to people who they are, all of a sudden the illusion, the lies, they fall away. You see them for what they are. You see them for the trap that they are. And then you can live. And again, I don't, to me, it's a lifelong journey. And there are times where you're going to get it. And then all of a sudden you're not going to get it. And you're going to get frustrated. And you're going to say, I thought I had it, but maybe I never had it. Maybe it's not gettable. And then you'll find that, but relish that, because that's when you're about to make a big movement upwards. That's when you're about to see something, you know, transform or transmute. And I love that. And we definitely have to link that. So let's make sure we want to support these voices, you know, that we see it, because that's how we grow. I think that. Yeah.
I love what you just said about how do we change it? It's what we're doing. Like that, it just gave me goosebumps, because I think I hear these thoughts of like, how do we change it? And I'm like, yeah, how do we? You know, it is easy to feel the cut, and to just hear it spoken of, it's what we're doing, is so empowering. And I think too, in this, like, well then what are we doing? Like, how do you characterize what we're doing? And I think it's, I'll even say what you said earlier, it's creating a space that here is not here without you, right? Like, I hope that is what, I think that's what we are trying to do together, and what we will do together, because that is the intention, is it is a place of radical acceptance of the wide spectrum. And it makes me think of another video that came across my reel, my reels, that was man invented God because he could not stand that woman created life. And I just like was floored and flabbergasted, and like the power in that statement. But I think it really does go back to this idea of radical acceptance of self, of other, of difference, of unknown. Like when we kind of tie together all of these little pieces that we've talked about today, with fear being just faith, but in something bad, like mental health, anxiety, that is proof of your power, right? It is something that can spark connection and allow us to help one another. And like sacred femininity is something that at its core is this allowance of the things that are thought of to be gross or
I'd even go further unsettling. Than allowance. Embrace it.
Yes.
Embrace it. Like it's not allow it in the sense of it's who it's good, but to embrace it. I mean, men are scared of everything feminine. Like, it is just so. I at my internship, we had 200 or so silk roses we were giving out for Valentine's Day. You know, just as hey, take one. You know, you're loved. You're cared for. Mm. You know, give it to somebody else if you want. You know, when we had papers where you could write down messages if you wanted to give it to somebody else.
Oh, I love that.
And, you know, it's funny, you know, obviously there's both men and women, you know, these are all college students coming in. And it was just so funny to see the reactions of a fair portion of the men versus the women as they come in. And you know, again, no judgment, just noticing. You know, there are, you know, while some men embraced that and loved it and just were absolutely comfortable with it, you could see that there would literally a look of horror would come upon a guy's face as he was walking, you know, by our table. And I was like, hey, would you like a rose? And, you know, the look, you'd think I offered him, you know, a dead bird or I don't know, you know, it was wild to see. And that's that. That fear. Why would you be afraid? I mean, like, what is stopping you from, you know, okay, I don't want this. I mean, it's a Silk Rose. Who gives a shit? But you know what? Like, you could give that to somebody in your class, or you know, take it home. You know, give it to your mom. Give it to your dad. Give it to your sister. You know, like, why? What is embarrassing about? And the same is true with anything. Woman oriented. You know, I mean, commercials. Like, you know, I mean, the fact that, like, oh, you know, I was watching, of all things, a brief documentary on the Bic pen. You know, that Bic crystal pen from it basically been the same for 50 years. But I guess in the mid 2000s, they came out with Bic for Her.
Oh, yes.
Was basically the same pen with different colors and more expensive.
More expensive.
And it's like, you know, I remember when I was growing up, maybe some of your listeners will, but the You've Come a Long Way, Baby, the Virginia Slims commercials that were an ad that used to be super prevalent. This idea that, smoking would make you, you deserve it, and again, it's just interesting to see, like, and again, same thing, but now this is more feminine, whatever exactly that means, and I don't even know where I'm going with this, but hopefully it's relevant.
I think it absolutely is, because even in hearing you talk about this, right? Like, I think the advertising piece is just so interesting and so indicative of, like, the broader culture and socialization. But in hearing you talk about the fear in these young men's, like, eyes at the idea of something feminine, like expressing care, like it doesn't have to be rooted in romance or anything like that, even, right? But I bet the men who were excited were likely the ones that had a girlfriend or a partner of some kind, that it's much easier to express that kind of love when it's in something conventional for men to be vulnerable about, which is like in a romantic partnership. But even in their fear of the idea of this, just like we were talking about fear still being faith in something scary, they are affirming the power of what y'all were doing. Their fear was an affirmation of everything that, like, vulnerability and the divinity of showing care and spreading love has, that they just have access to.
Yeah, what an observation. Thank you for sharing that. That was like, mwah, manna from heaven right there. I didn't even really think of it that way. I was looking at it through a different lens. But then I even look in my own life. So I'll give you another example. So full disclosure, I like to paint my toenails. I like to go get a pedicure. I like a gel pedicure, in fact. I even like manicures, and I like to paint my fingernails. And so I would take my daughter and I would go to get our nails done together and things like that. And so I'm walking out and about, and and people will ask me, your daughter painted your nails or something. And I found myself at that time being like, oh yeah, and then I had to examine that. Like, why am I not allowed to say, my daughter and I got it together, but I actually think it's kind of cool. Like, why at that? And now I would. But a year ago, I wasn't at that place because I didn't know who I was. And it's just another example of the fear of, and what are we really afraid of? That some cashier at the, somebody I'm just seeing for 5 seconds and never going to see again, possibly, is going to somehow judge me. And yet I'm afraid of that. I'm scared [S2] Right. [S1] Of that. I'm going to hide who I really am, because it's just amazing what you notice when you look at that. And there was a part of me I wasn't true to there. And so I would encourage for the men listening out there, take stock of that. Just start noticing. I'm not saying change. I'm not saying you're wrong in any way, shape, or form. There's no right or wrong. But is that who you really want to be? Do you need that? Or have you been sold a lie? What would it be like if there were, if powerful women ran the world instead of powerful men, what would change? Would we be where we are today? I think not. and so maybe we are transforming the world in that way too, because who knows? You know, there's this quote by Blake that essentially says, you know, who by William Blake, who I love as a, you know, he was kind of a mystic and wild. I mean, wild story, and his stuff is just so incredible. And I'm sure I'll refer to him again. But he basically said, you know, who's to say that the world wasn't created by somebody just treading on wine in a wine press somewhere in their imagination? You know, that nations rose up because of this. You know, I mean, even look at our current situation here in the U.S. with Donald Trump. The whole reason he even ran for office was because he got insulted at a press dinner in 2012. I mean, now maybe that's not entirely true. That maybe that's a surface level truth, but nevertheless, that had an impact. And who's to say what it caused? Right. You know, just such little things like that. So the little things we do matter. You know, if there's one person listening who's like, I want to try this, and just try it on. You know, you don't have to. You're not committing to it. There's no there's no money down. There's no, it costs you literally nothing, but yet it does cost you everything, because once you start doing it, you can't help but change, because you're seeing things differently. You're expanding, and people may fall, and it's scary. People don't want to do it because they may lose friends. You know, all of a sudden now all these things that kept them safe, these ideologies, and that you talk about unknown again, to go back to what you said earlier, fear of the unknown. Well, you know, it is unknown what somebody's response will be. If I say, no, I like to paint my toenails. I like having purple toenails. It makes me happy.
Give them the opportunity to meet you where you are with that, right? It's like, also in working from that place of fear, you are projecting your fear onto everybody else too, because the cashier at the supermarket may say, well, that's so cool, I love that. But by not giving them the opportunity to meet you there, it is actually like exponentially spreading your fear, as opposed to allowing someone else the opportunity to grow and accept, welcome, embrace, right? All of these. And again, even the language that we're using within this goes back and mirrors what you said at the very beginning of our conversation, expansive language as opposed to constrictive language, right? It is allowing and yes anding.
Yeah, it's improv. Life is improv. Like, everyone should take an improv course. Like, is my view. And in fact, I received an improv course as a gift for Christmas this year. And I haven't taken it yet because I right now I don't have time in my life. But once things settle down, I'm absolutely going to take it. Although it's scary as hell to me. But at the same time, life is improv. Like, the choice is are you a yes and, or are you a no but, or a yes? You know, what, like, can we remove the buts out of our lives? Like, but why again? Always asking why not me. Like, if you want good things for yourself, who wants bad things for themselves, right?
Yeah.
If there's something you want that's good for you, why not? Change the way you see it. You know, one of my favorite analogies in the Bible is around the spies who went to spy out the land of Canaan in Numbers, I believe. That basically Moses at the time sent out 12 spies into the promised land, the Canaan land, which of course is all an allegory anyway. And 10 of them came back and basically said, no, you know, there's giants in this land. You know, we can't possibly take this land. You know, they're bigger than us. There's grapes. You know, I mean, they're so huge. We're just grasshoppers. And meanwhile, two others, Joshua and Caleb, came back and said, you know, this is our land. God has given it to us. Let's go take it. Look at the fruit. The fruit is massive. It's like grapes the size of your head. You know, again, but how often, even talking about what we're talking about here, society, right? What we're trying to build. We have two choices, and it's a choice. Make no mistake, it's a choice. And I think you and I both are choosing the same thing. We're intending the same thing. But we can choose to say, the world is scary. There are giants out there. You and I, we're just grasshoppers. There's no way we're going to make a difference because we're just grasshoppers. And if that's what we believe, then we'd be right. That's, to go back to what you said, that's just faith in a negative. That's just faith in smallness. That's just faith in littleness. That's easy because it's not really faith. You're, if you don't have it, you don't need faith to think you don't have it. You're being a realist or whatever the case is. I disagree. Yeah. I feel, I don't see us as grasshoppers. I see the people out there as, I see the situation as grasshoppers, not the people, because people are not grasshoppers, but the forces against us are grasshoppers. We're the giants. And every one of our listeners, you're a giant. Don't fucking believe the hype. Don't believe what you've been told. You know, you're not a grasshopper. You are a giant. You are regal. You are a queen. And rule. It's what you're meant to do. But start with yourself. Because, you know, don't ever try to change somebody else. Like, that can't happen. You can't change anybody else. But if you know you're the queen, if you know who you are, if you know your power, others have to bow down. You're not making them bow down, you know, even to talk about that. Why bow down? To me, that is not a command in the sense of you need to bow down. It's a recognition that all, you know, that I am worthy, and circumstances and situations and reality, fuck it, it bows down to me. And we don't feel that way, but you know what? I bet there's days when Queen Elizabeth woke up and didn't feel like a queen. You know, maybe she had a cold. Maybe she had depression. Maybe you know, she had a stomach ache. And was on, you know, that doesn't
maybe
feel
like
a
queen. Maybe she needed some Wellbutrin.
Maybe she needed some Wellbutrin, absolutely.
Right.
But and, yeah. Did that make her less of a queen? No. And it's the same for you. It's the same for all of our listeners.
Yeah. Oh.
I can talk about that forever.
No. I completely agree. And it also makes me think of this, like, the idea of history is written by the victors, right? And a really big reason why we understand the people who are monarchs and kings and queens and Queen Elizabeth, right, is because they got to write their own narrative, their own story, or their people or their court scribes or whatever got to tell the story because they were on top. Write your own history. You do not want someone else to write your story for you. Start writing it for yourself. And when you write it for yourself, you will be the victor because history is written by the victor. Every single day. So in elementary school, my brother and I went to different elementary schools, and my dad would drive me to class, and the thing that he said every single day before I got out of the car was, today is the first day of the rest of your life. You have been given a pen. Write well. And I still think about that. And I think about, what is the story that I am writing today? And sure, I think sometimes I'll get a little high on my horse and think when I am writing, like, oh, won't it be beautiful and romantic and fabulous and inspiring when someday someone stumbles across this? But then I have to stop myself and say, no, it will be, because that is the story I'm writing. And that's good. That is okay. Not just okay. It is good. Embrace it. Embrace
that.
That
is incredible. That is monumental to do that. And everyone, yes, you are the author, the director, the actor, and the producer of your story. Full stop. No one else, you write your own story. It's a choose your own adventure. But you, we think we choose it out in the world. No, we choose it up here. We choose it. Yeah. We choose it in our mind. We choose how we interpret things. I can interpret things however I choose to. And then that's the one, no one can force me to interpret something some way. No one can tell me this is what that means if I don't choose to believe. That's power. I'm raising my daughter. If she doesn't want to do something, like, I could try to apply. I may make her do it by applying force in some way or another, but I can't force her to believe something. It doesn't matter what I do. And no one can force you to believe that you're less than, or no one can force you to believe that you're not royalty and that you're not sovereign, except you, except you. You are the only one. But there's a responsibility that comes with that too. And a lot of people don't like it because you have to own that. And if you choose not to, you know, sometimes it's easier to be ignorant. And it's easier to think, well, life is just, you know, whatever God's will, you know, God will do it for me, or life is just the way it is, or the universe is a cold, a harsh mistress, or whatever that thought pattern is. And again, I don't judge that. Is that serving you? You know, what if what I'm saying, maybe I'm full of shit, maybe I'm delusional. And listen, I don't mind being called delusional, because I think, you know, I think we need more delusional people in a good way. But what if what I'm saying is true? What would it be like? What would it mean to you if that was in fact the case? What would change in your life if what I'm saying is true? And why don't you try it? What does it cost you to try it? Assume what I'm saying is true. Test it. Not, you know, I'm not trying to sell you something. test it and try it and see. And when it works, because it will, try it a little bit more, go a little bit further. You know, you've come this far. Maybe you're willing to come a little bit farther.
Yeah.
And that's, and you'll, everyone comes at their own pace. They'll all come to it eventually. You know, I don't know what the afterlife, if there is one, if there isn't one, I don't dabble in that because I can't know. That's unknowable as far as I'm concerned. I could have a revelation somehow, but it would still be my own personal gnosis. It would not be, you know, it's not verified. There's no truth. But I can choose the truth. I choose my truth. And this is that's just it. My truth is I will not stop telling the story that I believe. And my story is that I am here to pour into people, to women, to strengthen them, and I'm not doing anything. I'm just lifting. I'm just there as a help, as a guide, and as a supporter, as an advocate, not as anything else. But it means everything to me. And I know it means everything to you. That's why we're here. So what a great day. Every day is a great day when you're talking about, you know, what's possible, you know?
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know. Do you have, so I know we're getting close to time here. We're probably over anyway, but if you had one, if you were a listener and you were listening to you and I, what would your one takeaway, I guess, be from today? Like, would there be something, what would you, is there something that just resonated particularly strongly in the directions we went?
Hundo P, there's just something about hearing words framed in another way that, like, will just click. You know, it's like when you just hear like a beautiful harmony, even though it's like, well, you've heard music before, you know the concepts that are true and whatever, but it's like when it's framed in just the right way, and it's like that. When you said that fear is just faith in a negative thing, like, my word, yeah. And the amount of power that I put in my fear sometimes, like, of course I have that same amount of power that I can put into the radical belief in grand possibilities, in expansion, because I clearly have that capacity. Why have I restricted it to fear? And I think you said something that I kind of wanted to ask about, because I agree, is that fear is easier. A lot of the times, staying in the fear is easier. Why do you think it's easier? Because I do think it is, but why?
I think it's a defense mechanism in the sense of there's a part of us, and I think it's true for all of us, that is afraid of being disappointed. So again, it comes back to fear. There, that, you know, we were disappointed with something as a kid. You know, I mean, because everybody, you know, there's always disappointment, something you were expecting. You know, I mean, a good example, I prayed for this and I didn't get it. You know, I remember being 6 years old, or 4 years old, and praying on my knees, like as diligent as a four-year-old could possibly be, that my parents wouldn't get divorced. And it didn't happen. I mean, they did get divorced. So that little part of me, right, is doesn't understand that. and is hurt and is disappointed and doesn't like that feeling. It didn't work. I'm powerless. And they don't like, we don't like that feeling. And so thinking, you know, if I were to focus on and believe these things, I might get disappointed. It might not work out the way I thought it was going to work out. And that little part of me doesn't think I can handle it because the pain was so great when I was 4 or 5, because I didn't know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. And you know, in my family, there wasn't a lot of conversation about it. you know, there was no, we didn't really talk about feelings and that's okay. God bless it. I mean, you know, it was what it was, but I mean, so to me, fear is easier. We don't like it, but it's more comfortable because there's only mm-hmm. upside. If I'm afraid I'm going to die tomorrow when I don't, well, geez, I've exceeded expectations. You know, I mean, yeah. Like things are better, you know, and the real question, and that's okay. I get that. I mean, it makes sense, right? But is that how you really want to live life? And again, what if there was an alternative? We do it because we don't think there's an alternative either. Like if you don't have an alternative, it says, well, I might as well, you know, worst case scenario it. But I guess I'm here to say there is an alternative. And if there is a gospel, to me, that's the gospel, the good news, is that, you know what? Whatever you want, you can have it if you believe it. Like, I mean, again, that is the fundamental thing I will never stop saying. And you can beat me with a baseball bat. You can lock me in prison. I mean, I'm serious about this. Like, I absolutely fundamentally believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that whatever you want, believe it, you have it, and it's yours. But the real key is what does it mean to believe you have it? Because we, you know, and think think about that statement, and even in good and bad, right? Faith and fear. If you think something bad is going to happen to you, it works that way too. It's not just good yeah. things. It's not, oh, I'm going to be rich. Believe I have it and it's mine. No, it's also believe in the opposite direction as well, that I'm going to get fired, that I'm not loved, that my friend isn't going to text me back, that my friend doesn't like me, that my boyfriend is cheating on me with somebody else, that my I'm no good, whatever those are, you start to believe those things and you're going to see evidence of them yeah. because that is fundamentally the way the world works. So yeah, I think it's a great question. Why fear? Because it's easier, because it's safer. It's easier in some senses.
I think it's basic physics, right? When you have an expectation of something, it actually creates a vacuum for that to come in and fill that space. And so when you, like, it's literally the energy of the universe. We know this to be true. If you create a vacuum, something has to come fill it. And if you have an expectation of negativity, you are creating a vacuum that is sucking negativity or whatever fear-based thing that is coming towards you. Same thing. I mean, law of attraction, right? It's physics. It's all physics. Yeah,
totally.
I completely agree. What is your takeaway? Or sorry, you were about to say something else. Don't let me derail you.
No. I was. What is my takeaway? Well, I mean, first of all, I'm just so grateful to be here. I'm just so happy to be here. I'm over the moon there. So that's one takeaway. Like I'm amazed by how much I love this dialogue and how important it is. And I find if there's anything in my life I say is holy to me, this is a holy time together, and I love that. It's a sacred time to me. You know, I think for me, my takeaway is to just continue to breathe into our dreams here, and to just see it, and it's a renewed focus of the importance of the work that we're doing. Though it may seem big and though it may seem, you know, like we're running uphill in the snow, like to trust even more, to double down on what we're doing and to do it more is really what comes up for me more than anything else. I would love to, you know, one thing we didn't get to explore today, which I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to, I would like to come back to at some point. You touched upon it, sort of this idea of the sublime and what that looks like. And someday, you know, maybe not next, eventually we'll come back to that because there's some interesting things I'd love, that really resonated with me. Like, how can we create Why can't our lives be sublime? Like, why can't our lives be sublime? Like, why is that? Why can't that be a goal? Why can't that be something we choose to live in the sublime? Like, to me, what we're doing here is fucking sublime. Like, that could be the name of our podcast, fucking sublime, because that's what this is. Like, and I hope, well, I don't even hope. I'll just prophesy. Like, I know that this is needed, and I know this will resonate with people. And the right, and if anyone is interested in you know, talking to us, reach out to us. We want this to be interactive. We would love to have guests. So if you're powerful and you know it, like, we want to hear from you. And if you want to be powerful and you know it, we also want to hear from you. And if you hate us, well, you know, we'll hear from you too, but, you know, don't expect us to put much weight on. And in fact, just as you said about how with the roses, how that showed that, you know, what we're, so, you know, come at us, please. You know, I think that we can handle it. It's not a dare, but you know what? I think we can have dialogue at least. So
it's further proof of faith, proof of concept, right? I just completely agree. But I had something I was going to say and it left my brain. But yes, absolutely. I completely agree. If people have anything to say, share, want to chat, want to talk, in the description, you'll be able to contact both Dennis and myself. Of course, social media handles are there. Reach out to us. There are all sorts of ways to get in touch, to connect. We want to connect. We want this. This wouldn't be here if you weren't here, listener. Like, that applies to you too, wherever you are, whatever time you are. Absolutely. And I want to extend that to topics too. Like Dennis just said, we'll probably circle back to the idea of the sublime in the future and romanticism, but we also have big plans for other books and topics and things to expand on. So let us know if there's anything specific that you would like to hear as well. And I'm just so excited to see where this goes. Dennis, thank you. Bree says, always,
I bow down. It is an honor to do this with you, and to be part of this is truly one of the most greatest experiences of my life. And I don't say that lightly. Like, I genuinely love what we're doing here, and love listening to your thoughts, love hearing your thoughts, and love how we just bounce off of each other, and just. You know, the yes anding here is probably makes some people sick, frankly, but good, because I don't think we can do it enough, because that's how it is such an honor. And so yes. Awesome. I can't wait to next week. Well, who knows where we'll go? Who knows where we'll go? But
it'll be somewhere magical.
Lovely.
That's for sure.
It will be lovely, magical, and powerful. So
yes.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and talk to you next time.
Bow Down is a weekly podcast from the Cohere Collective that explores esoteric and empowered feminism.
Please subscribe to Bow Down wherever you may be listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. And if there's anyone you think would enjoy this episode, or maybe just needs to hear it, please share it.
If you want to stay up to date on all things Bow Down, you can follow the Cohere Collective on any social media platform at the Cohere Collective, and check out other content and offerings at www.thecoherecollective.com.
If you're interested in working with Rhys to find and pursue your purpose, I encourage you to head to www.thecoherecollective.com/life-coaching.
If you're interested in working with Dennis to shed your mask and embrace your desires, you can email Dennis at dennis@theheartstoybox.com.
Huge thank you to Jack Corbett for Bow Down's music. You can find him on Instagram at j.corbe. Thank you all for joining us today. We're so glad you're here.
And as always, we hope you feel like you are living more coherently. And until next time, love.